seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. If they Irish Open, of course you want to play at the weekend.
Hello there, Golf Weekly friends. We come to you apologising for not appearing last week, but we are here this week. Fionn Davenport, hello.
Hey, Joe.
How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. Keeping well. I'll tell you exactly what I'm doing. I'm sitting at home, and on my giant 55-inch television, I've got the preferred groups of the first round of the TPC. Mm-hmm. Of the players, and so I've been watching Xander Schauffele, Justin Thomas, bit of Rory McIlroy, some Phil, and looks nice. So yeah, I'm comfortable. You, how are you?
Yeah, very well. So for the players, we have the world's top 50 there. We also have the top 50 in the FedEx there. It's a deep and talented tournament. We'll get on to all that later on. Nathan Murphy not around this week. He's off doing, I don't know what actually. I don't know where he is. He's not in today, full stop. So a few bits to get to. It's an interesting couple of weeks. Things are all kicking off now. Ian Cairns on Twitter said, lads, it's been 14 days since the last pod. WTF, so much has happened. Trevor Naughton is a new listener to the podcast. And what he's doing at the moment is going through the back catalogue. And he says here, the Conor Deegan reunion podcast was excellent. I don't even remember that.
I might be having a brain fart altogether. No, I don't remember it either.
James O'Riordan, lads, I'm starting to think I could beat McIlroy on the Sunday. He's beyond hopeless. This is a touch harsh. Myself, McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, and our very own Peter Lawrie need to get out for a round ASAP. Please get some friends of the pod actually on the pod. Would be good crack. James, I'm going to be honest with you. If a spot comes up for some reason with Peter Lawrie, Rory McIlroy, and Jordan Spieth in a four ball, you're probably not top of the queue.
That's fair.
Brian Hegarty then. Rory's in fine form, but his performance in final rounds definitely questionable. I can see him in contention at the Masters in the final round due to form, but will he finish strongly? Hashtag I don't think so. John Smith. Oh yeah, several. There's an absolute mess with our apps with our podcast at the moment. So apologies for that.
Yeah, I've noticed that as well.
We're on to the people at iTunes, and it's been like a 2 month thing of nothingness. So. You may be struggling. John Smith, just check the Newstalk app. A stack of Golf Weekly podcasts are awaiting commute sorted next week. Yeah, if you're struggling, this is a weird one to say because if you're hearing this, you're not struggling. So yeah. I don't know what the point of saying it is, but certainly you'll get us on the Newstalk website. Don't know what's happening with iTunes at the moment. We're in the process of trying to sort everything out.
Speaking of the guy who would like to be in the spot in the four ball, I did tell you that story about Brian McFadden at the Irish Open a few years ago, haven't I? I think, well, just anyone who is listening who hasn't heard the story before. So I was in the Carton House the night before the Pro-Am of the Irish Open, whatever it was, maybe 5 years ago or 6 years ago. And Brian McFadden came over to one of the people who had the list of players and who you're playing with for the next day. And he asked, could I have a look at the list that Rory's on? And so Rory was playing with Andrei Shevchenko, the former Ukrainian superstar footballer, and some other guy that none of us had ever heard of. And so he goes, yeah, just get rid of him and put me in, because seriously, it's in Ireland. It'd be great. You know, it'd be like, that'll be a fun thing. Me
the
and Rory.
Press
and
will love it.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, Brian certainly not, he certainly is. He knows the ways of the media. So he implored that the guy, the fourth on the list, be removed. And so I was like watching this kind of, I liked the brazen neck of it though. I thought that was great. Mm. And, but the fourth guy on the list was the head of Gazprom. So, so it's like, yeah, no, we're not getting rid of him.
For listeners further away, Brian McFadden in Westlife, one of the great Irish fans.
Yep.
One of the greats. Got a hair transplant in the last year.
Oh, has he?
Yeah.
Why do you follow him on Instagram?
A friend of mine was interviewing him.
Ah, right.
And okay. I was very interested to see how his hair transplant had bedded down.
Yeah. Do you know, I have to say, of all the ones that I've ever seen that I know of, I must say James Nesbitt's is the most impressive.
Yeah, it's a good job. Yeah, it's a good job. McFadden's not so good, I would say.
Okay.
He's done this thing which you shouldn't do, is he's got the fringe sticking up, you know? So he's got a bit like teenage disco in my day, the fringe is sticking up and it just exposes the stitched in hairs. I think if you get a transplant like that, you just got to brush it down. You can't have your fringe up. The days of you having a quiff are gone, you know? You got to take what you can. That's my honest advice to him.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's good advice and you've got good head of hair, so.
I'm retreating rapidly.
You are not.
Rapidly.
I'm looking. There's a lot of Brian McFadden's on Instagram and I can't see a blue check next to any of them.
Okay. I think he's Brian McFadden 123.
Ah, very good. This is good stuff.
Some of our best stuff here, Fionn. Chris Mooney, what about Captain McGinley? That's Paul. What about Captain McGinley saying he's a regular listener, referencing last week's pod in the OTB interview? That freaked me right out.
Yeah.
Suddenly thinking, I need to just run back and just double check everything we've ever said about anyone.
Ever for the last 7 years. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, it was nice though.
It's brilliant.
There are a lot of golf podcasts now in the world, aren't there?
Someone asked me this the other day and I was like going, I could only think of like four or five. I know there's lots.
No, there's lots
but,
now.
But of the ones that have kind of, I like to think that even though we mightn't have the resources of some of the bigger podcasts and despite what one commentator on Instagram said that if we weren't so shite, we might get some good guests on.
We don't try and get guests on.
No, I know that. That's the point is like we are three guys, sometimes four, who talk about golf. We love it, etc. But I was trying to think, it's like we're in really good company. Like I think that we might be, you know, the small, scrappy little podcast out of the corner of Northwest Europe that, that kind of sits well alongside, you know, the ones that have the huge, giant, super American media conglomerations behind them.
And, see, I think the weakness of those ones is they can't really
say anything.
Yeah, that is the truth.
Precisely.
There is a certain freedom in being the scrappy underdog.
Yeah.
Which is why when Paul McGinley said he listened, I thought, well, hang on. I mean, if people are going to actually listen to what we say, we're going to have to change the whole format of the podcast.
Yeah, I know.
Didn't work at all if you're listening. Let's get to some of the golf. There's lots to talk about. Let's start with Rory McIlroy because he's a jump-off point from last week, the Arnold Palmer. McIlroy's season thus far. Fourth, fifth, fourth, second, and sixth. He's at Sawgrass like everybody else is. He's with Mickelson and Kuchar, by the way, at Sawgrass. So the final round woes being much discussed. Bay Hill, the ninth time in the past 2 years McIlroy's been in a final pairing where he has failed to get the job done. Interestingly, Fionn, the last time he was successful when in the final pairing is the Irish Open at the K Club in 2016.
Yeah, it's a while ago.
McIlroy says, doesn't matter if you're in the final group, fifth group, it's golf at the end of the day. It doesn't really matter. Paul McGinley was in the, certainly speaking on the Irish Independent website, I don't know where he was speaking originally, said of McIlroy, he has lost his confidence when it comes to the last day.
And in fairness, our new favourite friend of the pod, Paul McGinley, knows McIlroy very, very well and has eyes to look at his game far better than mine. But what I can do is I can just rely on the statistics. So I've got all of the statistics related to the last three events. So, I mean, you read out, okay, so his finishes are consistent. So he's top 10.
Yeah.
He's had a good season so far, definitely tripping along. But let's take the Arnold Palmer. So he shot 72, 70, shot a really good 66 in round three, and then he finished it off with a very flat 72. And then the statistic that jumps out is strokes gained putting. So 0.183 first round, 0.903 second round, very good in the third round with strokes gained of 1.437, and then lost minus 2.08 for the fourth round. Mm. And I was thinking, there's a narrative here that emerges that all of a sudden Rory's putting woes, which are so boring to talk about at this stage that we'll just leave it at that, that they're the ones that kind of sneak up and bite him on the Sunday. But then you look, for example, at the World Golf Championship in Mexico, it was actually all right. Like he gained 1.75 strokes gained putting on the last day. And then at Riviera, the event before that, strokes gained putting 0.834, 842, which is a hell of a lot better than his round one, where he lost 2.4 shots, but a lot worse than the 3.6 strokes he gained putting on the second day. So I'm not seeing like this massive pattern. But what I am seeing, though, is that whatever, like, you know, obviously, like all great players, he has his good days on the greens and his bad days on the greens. But clearly, this fourth round issue where he's like looking to just press the pedal a little harder, the putting stroke doesn't stand up, really. Mm. It's not that like he has a disaster like he did. I mean, he put it very poorly at Bay Hill. But in the previous two, he didn't put badly. It's just indifferently. And, you know, and the idea of like, you know, you've got like, say, four or five putts to make inside 12 feet. And like the great putters will make 50% of them on the hot day. He's not making any of them. He's tapping in for par. But like, you know, he's just mooching around at level par on the last day. And that's obviously a major issue.
I'd be interested to see his proximity to the hole at the Arnold Palmer on Sunday, because I don't think he gave himself many birdie opportunities.
He didn't.
There was an awful lot of just two putting. 30 putts. I felt like there were no... I'm trying to think, but like there was no succession of big birdie chances where he was missing them and he lost his momentum as a result. I don't think he struck the ball as well as the Saturday when he shot that 66. I think he was just meh. You know, but his approach work, and he didn't give himself a lot of opportunities. If you look at his final round scoring, Philip Reed had this in the Irish Times. You know, going back to 2017, so South African Open, one of his better final rounds, he shot a 68. That was in 2017. He shot a 70 in the Dubai Desert Classic. Then across 2018, he was in the final round four times. The killer for me, the 74 at the Masters. A 74 in the final round of the Masters. You know, that's just not good enough. And then a 70 at the BMW when Francesco Molinari beat him. And then a 73 at Firestone when Justin Thomas won there. And then the Tour Championship, which Tiger Woods won, obviously. He shot a 74, didn't lay a glove on the course or Woods. This year, thus far, Fionn, it's been a 72. Xander Schauffele, the Tournament of Champions, a 72. He finished fourth. And then a decent round in Mexico, you would have to say, a 67. Mm. Dustin Johnson won that. I'd have no issue with that. And as you said, against Molinari at the weekend, it was a 72 from McIlroy. So just a bit flat, a bit meh from a guy who shot a 66 the day before. But I really don't think he gave himself many opportunities.
No, he didn't. Palmer. And that's it.
Because so that wasn't just a putting thing.
No, but if you go deep, so again, okay, so that's exactly right. So there isn't this massive pattern of like all of a sudden that the numbers blow up horribly on the Sunday with the putter. But like, for example, in approach to the greens, it's 0.317 strokes gained versus the 1.4 he gained on round three and the 0.8. So he's half as good again from a fairly kind of flat round two. I mean, he had a pretty poor round one in approaches to the green, but he still shot a 72. Mm. So it's like, and also as well, as it's worth pointing out that like, just as we apply the forensic microscope of analysis to Rory McIlroy for obvious reasons, so Matt Fitzpatrick might be walking away going, hang on a second, I was in the lead. And, you know, how do you argue, you know, Molinari comes streaking up the backfield. Mm. Like Rory could have had, he would have been, what is it, if he was 2-3 strokes better, would he have made the playoff? Sometimes Molinari was just, and Molinari's playing the best golf of his life.
Yeah, so Molinari, 44-footer birdie put on the 18th. And
that was unbelievable.
Go a bit ballistic by his standards. 64,
yes,
12
I'm
under par.
Very happy, very happy. I like it very much.
He went from 17th at the start of the day to finish top. $1.6 million, 64, it was brilliant in the golf. If he hadn't won this week, you might fancy him around the players because he's such a brilliant ball striker. So we'll see how he goes. But McIlroy looks disappointing again. His record at the players is not good. He's missed the cut four times out of nine. Big winners, big hitters win at the players. Short hitters win at the players. There's a clip here I want to play you from Brandel Chamblee. There's a clip later on we'll play of Chamblee. He's in fine form on the Golf Channel at the moment. So he is making the argument, as you'll hear, that the players that TPC Sawgrass is about the best, most challenging, most demanding course that they play. You can't hit driver in every hole. And crucially, you'll hear him talk here about the need to hit the ball both ways, to really work the ball both ways. Because he was asked about Dustin Johnson, Johnson's record here. He's never made a top 10. And he was also asked about Brooks Koepka, number 3 in the world. And as you'll hear, he makes the point, they both hit a fade predominantly, and that's not a good recipe. So here's Chamblee.
Both of them play a fade. They predominantly play a fade. Neither of them have finished in the top 10 here in the last 3-4 years. Why is that? Why is that? And I think it's just the mere fact that they're reluctant to hit the necessary shot to put themselves in the right position so that they can be the players that they are on paper. But they are not those papers. They are not those players here. You think about it. You need to get yourself in the right position so that you can draw it into 1. You need to draw it into 4. You need to draw it into 8. You need to get it down the left side at 7 so that you can actually cut it into that green. You need to get it in the left side of 10 so that you can cut it in that green. If you hit it down the right side, you're coming across the green. Dustin Johnson struggles at 7. He struggles at 8. He struggles at 10. Brooks Koepka has made the last 3 years here 8 double bogeys, a triple bogey, and a quadruple bogey. On that hole right there, he's made a double, a triple, and a quad, and he plays a fade. You know who has the lowest scoring average on this hole since 1983? Tom Lehman, because he hits a high, soft draw. There are so many shots out here that require a draw. And if you don't have the ability to hit a fade and then a draw, or a draw and then a fade, well, you get hobbled a little bit. And even though these guys have hinted at playing good golf around here, inevitably they get in a spot where, and I'm looking at Brooks Koepka. Brooks Koepka has played the 17th hole here the last 3 years, 9 over par. He's played the 13th hole, 5 over par. He gets tangled up in spots just because he doesn't have the right shot. He's reluctant to hit the right shot. And again, that's why I go back to, I think this is literally the best golf course for professional golfers anywhere in the world.
There you are. Sawgrass to go up in your opinion. Asks several questions. It's a ball striker's course, like can't hit driver in every hole. So
yeah,
approach shots. Sergio Garcia has done very well here traditionally, you know, those kind of players. I had a nibble on Tommy Fleetwood.
I think is Sergio, in terms of birdies made over the last 5 years, he's way up there. He's in the top 3. And oddly enough, like a couple of players now, I saw the statistic, and forgive me, listeners, I was watching it and I noticed it when it came up on the screen. I was like, okay, I don't know that player and I don't know that player. And obviously I know Sergio. And then another player, I was like, wow, such an interesting motley crew of players who played. Oh, Adam Scott, sorry. Adam Scott and Sergio have done better at TPC than any other player, bar 2 others that I don't really know, in the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
So certainly that one statistic tends to lend credence to Chamblee's point, doesn't it? That this is a creative course. You have to be really plot your way around. Although Tiger Woods could have done it. Didn't Tiger Woods was going well until the 14th last year. And that kind of undid him because didn't he go water on the left? I seem to remember. But anyway, yeah. So, but it's an interesting one. So now, and oddly enough, is after having to listen to that, because I like Chamblee, I'm going to watch it now with renewed vigor and interest.
Back in March for the first time since 07. It's traditionally May, obviously. So it definitely injects a bit of life into things. On Tiger Woods, I mean, interesting. So he's back from his neck issues.
Yeah.
If you offer me anything right now on Woods, it would be this, that he finishes in the top 20 and doesn't have any neck issues. Because if we have to get back to a day-to-day update on Woods' health, that would be very grim. He was talking about the problem, and he's making no bones about the fact that his neck issue is a consequence of his back surgery, his fourth back surgery. It was just gradually getting worse. He said, that is just because my lower back is fused and so the stress has to go somewhere if I don't have movement. So it's very important for me going forward since the surgery to keep pliable, or else the stress is going to go somewhere. Just part of the nature of the sport. If you have force, it's got to go somewhere. If it's not my lower back, it's going to be in the hip. I have had 4 knee operations. It's got to go somewhere. We're not immune to having the forces go somewhere. Eventually, on a repetitive sport, you're going to wear something out. So
it has to go somewhere.
Yeah, and it was going to his neck, he feels.
Right.
So he's back and hopefully he's okay. The really interesting news is Matt Killen.
Yeah. Did you know Matt Killen?
No.
Had you heard of him?
No.
Neither
have
I. Yeah.
He's only 33 years of age, Matt Killen. A rising star. So, I mean, famously, you've mentioned this several times, when Earl Woods went to Butch,
one of
the things he said was, look, you look after the swing, buddy, but do not go near...
the putting.
Do not go near the putting. That is my reserve. Yeah. Woods last year, 44th in putting strokes gained, and has been worse this season, but it's a small enough sample size. So Matt Killen is 33 years of age. He is now Woods' putting consultant, coach, whatever terminology you want to use. I was watching live at the range last night, and he was on the green with Woods.
Yeah.
And he was taking out his camera phone and videoing Woods take some shots. And they were laughing. They seemed to have a nice rapport. So as a teenager, Killen gave lessons to Kenny Perry. And then he worked with Justin Thomas's father, and he started working with Justin Thomas. And Thomas has been singing his praises, said he helps me simplify things. He gets me working on the range to the course really well. Can play my best golf under him, yada, yada, yada. So like he's worked with several. He worked with JB Holmes as well, a few others. But I can't remember Woods, beyond having a chat with Steve Stricker, doing too much in the way of putting coaches.
No. Me neither. But it is interesting. He's also, I looked at the Bud Cauley and Blaine Barber. Now, if you need a recommendation for a putting coach, Bud Cauley and Blaine Barber. But apparently lauded as one of the best young teachers in the game. So, and it's kind of interesting is Woods. So I was reading in one of the blogs that like Woods's MO generally is to work with coaches that operate in the same circles of those around him. So he clearly has a half decent relationship with Justin Thomas. So the idea is, this is the guy. I'm going to go talk to this guy as well. So it's not like it's perhaps to suggest that Tiger isn't seeking out a technique as much as he's observing that someone is having practical results from working with someone else. So he goes, ooh, I wouldn't mind a piece of that. So let's see if it works for me.
Yeah. Killen hasn't said much. He just said to Woods, his strokes looks really good to me. He doesn't preach a certain set method, which I always prefer. I think he's going to, he'll tailor each individual. Like the one stroke you don't mess too much with is Tiger Woods' stroke of all the strokes in the world.
No.
But it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. It's like when you consider, and it's not just, I mean, he's had a pretty bad, but like, so 2 weeks ago in Mexico, he had 6 3 putts for the week.
Yeah, it was the first time since 1997 or six that he had 6 3 putts in a week.
Yeah, he had 4 3 putts the week before. And that's at the Genesis Open or at Riviera.
Yeah.
And including in the last round, total number of distance in terms of putts made, 50 feet. Like that's, those are like, when we look at the Tiger Woods career putting stroke stats, this will be like this weird downward spike. Mm. Like that is an absolute anomaly. Like Tiger Woods went, 15 years without anywhere near those kind of statistics. So clearly he's like, right. Need to fix this.
Yeah.
So,
Jordan Spieth, Fionn. Jordan Spieth.
Oh, stop. No. Say it ain't so, Joe. Say it ain't so.
I think it is.
By the way, that's a really famous, I've just inadvertently made a reference to one of the more famous utterances in American sporting history. Mm-hmm. So, have you ever heard of Shoeless Joe Jackson?
Mm-hmm.
Are you humming as in just keep going with your anecdote?
No, it's when he moves and the kid runs up to him and says, say it ain't so, Joe.
Oh, very good. Yeah, no, it's when, so he's in court. He's coming out of the trial for fixing the 1919 World Series. And so the kid comes up and he goes, say it ain't so, Joe. Say it ain't so. And it always struck me as profoundly sad because poor old Joe Jackson, who was brilliant, but not even close to being the leader of that particular ruse, ended up being barred for baseball for life. And, Anyway, say it ain't so, Joe.
I got confused and thought it might have been when DiMaggio moved.
No.
And the kid ran up and said, say it ain't so, Joe.
Oh, he might have repeated. But actually, funny enough, I'm nearly certain. Now, I'm relying here on Ken Burns' baseball documentary, which I've watched about 18 times.
Okay.
Is that when the 1919 Chicago White Sox were brought to trial and charges of whatever it is, fixing games or whatever. And that outside the courtroom, Joe Jackson was to say, it ain't so, Joe. say it ain't so.
No, I'll go with you. I'll bow to you.
Maybe our American fans might be able to correct me. So
we have
who knows?
We have the internet.
Yeah, we do. So, anyway, go on.
Do you know what was interesting? Before you pointed me in the way of this Brandel Chamblee clip on Spieth. So last night, I'm sure lots of people may have had the same experience. They're not that many. But certainly, if anybody is going to have this experience, it will be Golf Weekly listeners, given the levels of nerdishness. So Live at the Players was on last night, and there was an interesting 5-6-7 minute period where Brooks Koepka was giving his press conference. And it was a split screen, so they were showing Koepka giving his press conference.
I watched it as well, yeah.
And then on the other green, Jordan Spieth was doing, it was putting.
Yeah.
And Jordan Spieth was having what I can only surmise as an existential crisis with his putting, because he must have missed about 15 to 20 putts in a row from about 12 feet. And he had Michael Greller there, and he had somebody else there who I'm not sure who it is, some kind of putting consultant, obviously. It wasn't McCormack, in so much as I could tell, who looks after a swing. It was more of a short game person. And, I mean, the body language was not good.
No.
It really wasn't. And so you'd kept you kind of chatting away. It was fine. It wasn't spectacular. It was fine. And you were just crying out for someone to come on and say, you know, what we're seeing on the left is Jordan Spieth having a meltdown. It was unbelievable, and it was just a snapshot. And eventually, then he moved to a different pin position, and he started rolling some putts, and it was kind of fine. And he put in 5 or 6 or 7 in a row from 12 feet, and they cut to something else. It might have been Tiger, but man, it was interesting. And it just, in light of what you sent me on this morning, I was thinking, God, Spieth, I'm just not holding out much hope. So I'll play the clip. The genesis of this maybe is that Brandel Chamblee. You sent it on. He was talking to Jeff Shackelford, and Shackelford was saying, look, it's been a tough kind of year for Spieth, and he's had mono, and then he's had kind of different issues going on, and what's the story? And Chamblee said it's all about the swing for him. The swing's not good. There's no trigger move was one of the points he made, which was the forward press, which is gone. The swing is much shorter, not giving him the same time in transition. He's not turning as deeply into his right hip. He said the swing is stripped of its athleticism. Yeah. And interestingly, for all the derision that Peter Laurie and others will often, and you look, Spieth's swing is a bit quirky to say the least and not that aesthetic. But Chamblee was saying he always thought Spieth's was one of the best on tour. So he had been a fan of Spieth's swing. They're talking last night at the Players, and you'll hear, interestingly, David Duval come in. Chamblee is sort of pitching this as like the age of players' games falling apart, of players completely losing their game, and as
the disappearance of the golfer.
Yeah, because there's so much tinkering, he thinks, and so much golf instruction. So here is Chamblee. This was just last night talking about Spieth in that context.
Over the last 10, 15 years, I guess it's nothing new. Chip Beck, fell. He lost his game. Baker Finch lost his game. But in this particular era, more players than I can ever recall just disappear inexplicably. You know, Luke Donald went to get his game fixed, change his game a little bit, maybe some injuries. But you start thinking about Anthony Kim, Camilla Vijegas, Nick Watney, Mike Weir, Michelle Wee, Lydia Ko, Yanni Sen. It goes on and on and on. And yeah, typically injuries or swing changes bring that on. But it seems like to me, David, it's just an overindulgence of golf instruction leads to constant changes.
Well, yeah, I would agree with that almost entirely. People have talked about me, and the vast majority of what happened with me was injury. And people, why is he trying to change his swing? I've never tried to change my swing. I tried to restore my swing. I wanted to put it back. But I wonder, when you have dramatic changes like that and you have such very clear evidence that things are different, is there a different problem that we don't know about? Is there an injury or something that has happened?
He won the Australian Open in 2016. One of the things he doesn't talk about, surfing, hurt his left ankle. And especially the way we know in which he gets through the ball, has the bent left arm. He also, the way in which you'll see he'll rotate on that left ankle, there's a lot of stress that goes into that. That ankle was strapped for a while. That was something that he kept secret. And then obviously last year was mono. Certainly not trying to give him an out. I'm sure he's very aware of his predicament right now. But you talk about cause and effect, injuries for you detailed. You're right, Chip Beck. Often it can be a little thing too. But you know, it's like just something that drips away, you know, mold or termites or whatever. They eat the whole house before you know it.
That's right. You can lose your game intermittently, but think about how many people you have to make happy before you hit a shot in today's game. As you're standing behind the ball, you have to go through and have a perfect pre-shot routine to make your sports psychologist happy. You have to have a conversation with the caddy to make the caddy happy. And you have to make the right moves in your golf swing to make the swing instructor happy.
Yeah, there we are. See, I sort of feel like Spieth is too smart for this to happen to.
Yeah, yeah. And every part of me says, no, it's not true. It can't be true. And I like, you know, obviously we're massive fans of Jordan Spieth.
Yeah.
He's my favorite thing on a golf course besides, you know, one Tiger Woods. But like, and the thing is, but then I'm conflicted because on the one hand is like, no, there's no way. Spieth, as you say, that's exactly right. He is far too smart for this to be true. But then on the other hand, I've consistently, despite all of the derision that Brandel Chamblee gets from, you know, the bigger forces in U.S. golf and indeed a lot of PGA players who kind of ridicule some of his assumptions, I always find Chamblee to be absolutely convincing. And so there's a part of me is that like as Spieth kind of tinkered his swing out of relevance, you know, that all of a sudden, and then you're thinking, but he's only 24 and, you know, it's like.
Or there's the Frank Nobilo theory, you know, that he hurt his ankle surfing in Australia and it was patched up for a long time. The left ankle takes a lot of pressure in the golf swing anyway, and especially Spieth. Like we can all picture his ankle right now on the downswing. It's like he almost digs his heel in and then almost flicks the left heel. Flicks the whole left foot forward. So if that's damaged, Nobilo made the point, like that can be the genesis of your swing tinkering. That's what Duval said. Like it was about injury for him, and people think you're tinkering with your swing and actually you've got a small injury and you're trying to almost rework your swing around.
You're working your swing around the injury so as to not make the thing worse. Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, it's been an almightly bad, is it 18 months for Spieth?
Yeah.
That he's just been pretty much nowhere?
Pretty much. I mean, I think you're going back to the Open, really. The last time we saw him do something, obviously at Augusta last year, he had a real push on the final day, and we're all clinging on to some kind of hope that Augusta inspires him again this year, just because of the brilliance of that course. But he never kicked on from that. That was an isolated moment almost of inspiration as opposed to him turning a corner.
Yeah. But I mean, no, it's interesting stuff. And when I watched the clip, I was just sitting there going, geez, this is like, you know, maybe I'm naive, but I don't think Chamblee does things just for hype or effect. I think he genuinely thinks about what he says and then he kind of just goes, right, well, this is what I'm seeing. And I mean, clearly golf doesn't want Spieth to disappear.
No.
Absolutely not. And I don't think Chamblee is saying Spieth is going to disappear. But I think the worst critique Chamblee is making is that this kind of carry-on, he risks becoming less of a force or certainly disappearing as the force that he clearly positioned himself to be up until 2 years ago.
Yeah, it can be a black hole. It's interesting that you sent me on that this morning because Koepka in his press conference last night was interesting. I thought it was very interesting on a few fronts.
Yeah.
Did you watch it?
Oh, my God. Yeah. But it was funny. Maybe it's Koepka's tone of voice, but he's so monotone.
Monotonous.
So what happened was my eye, inevitably, after a little while, I just kind of ignored Koepka and was watching what was happening in the left side of the frame. So I was watching Spieth. I was watching Tiger. It's kind of cool watching Tiger just put.
Do you know what? I thought I thought Tiger looked happy.
Yeah. He looked really jolly. Yeah, definitely. Anyway, sorry, I interrupted. Go on, you were going to say.
Just on two points. One, a journalist at one stage, I mean, they are overblowing this. In the way that golf is, just as a pretext, in the way that golf is so desperate for anything interesting, in the way that every time Bryson DeChambeau hits a shot now, they have to say he's a scientist and he uses maths. They are overblowing the, hey, Brooks Koepka gives opinions now story. Like, it's completely overdone. That said, a journalist did say to him, hey, Brooks, you know, do you feel like because you've three majors now, you have more license to speak your mind? You know, you're speaking your mind so much. It's amazing. And Koepka kind of just deadpanned, turned to them and said, no, it's because you guys are asking more interesting questions.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sorry I missed that because that's actually brilliant.
And he was like, I don't know how many, like, I'd say you guys have asked me about going out on the European Challenge Tour about 500 times. I mean, I try and give you a different answer every time. Yeah, it was good. It benefited me. But like, you've asked me that about 500 times. All you ever asked me for about 3 years was how I'm playing. Yeah. So if you ask me more interesting questions, it's like, I want interesting questions. Ask me them. I'll give you an answer.
That's really good.
Silence in
the
room.
That's brilliant.
That was good. And then the second point I thought was interesting was they were asking him about, see, it's always in a press conference. It's funny that you've got, say, maybe 20, 30 journalists and they're all potentially working on a different themed piece. So clearly somebody in the room, and I'd say if you look through all the press conferences, they might ask the same question of each player and then they can build a piece around it. So somebody said, Brooks, can I ask you about swing aids? You know, why? Like, because I think they're building a piece on swing aids in the modern era or whatever. What do you use? Do you use anything? What are they? Have you found them good? Blah, blah, blah. And Koepka says, no, I don't use anything now. And the guy goes, okay, follow up. Did you own TrackMan or did you buy a TrackMan? He goes, yeah, I did. I got TrackMan. I used it once, which was really interesting. And he said, they were like, where is it now? And he's like, oh, my brother stole it. You know, brother asked, could I use it? Because I know you're not using it. He said, yeah. But here's what I found interesting. And I think this might be good for amateur golfers. He said, and it ties in with the speed point. That's what got me onto this. For him, he thinks of the golf swing as an athletic move. He said, I liken it to a basketball free throw. Because he said, you can go out and you can worry about positions. And he said, every single day, even professionals like us who play every single day, we do not put the golf club in exactly the same position every day because it's literally impossible. I mean, it might be pretty close. Yeah. But you're talking about such fine margins. We do not put it in the same position every day. It can't be done. So he said, I don't worry about that stuff at all. I don't worry about TrackMan. I think of it as an athletic move. Almost, I got the impression he was saying, like, you know, golf is so difficult because you pull the trigger from a standing start. Whereas he's like, it's more of a response. So I think he gets into his setup and that prompts the response, which is like a basketball free throw.
Yeah.
And that was really interesting. And he's like, just keeps it simpler for me. And it just takes a lot of the... And you think what Jordan Spieth's gone through, maybe, or people who go into that black hole, the age of a disappearing golfer. He's like, no, no, no. This business of trying to put the club in exactly the same spot every day, absolutely not.
Yeah.
You know, and you wouldn't if you think about it.
You just taught me a really valuable lesson.
You wouldn't with a free throw, basketball. You wouldn't every day go, now, are my fingers exactly the same place?
Is
the angle of my... could you imagine if a basketball player started thinking about the golf swing in terms of...
The ball wouldn't release from his hands.
Oh, my God. Like, the angle of my elbow, what's that like?
Yeah,
The tilt of my shoulders. Have I got the tilt? They would just say... I think what Koepka does is the equivalent of a basketballer looking at the hoop, quickly judging the distance and the angles, and then just letting it happen. And I think he gets into a position over the ball, certain position, and then he responds to that position and goes. And it's an athletic move. It's not position here, angle here. And I thought, you know what? There's a reason this kid's going to be around for a long time.
Yeah. You've just taught me the value of, just as we know, never judge a book by its cover. Never judge the content of what someone says by the tone of their voice.
Oh, listen, it was tough. It was tough work, but... Yeah. Jeez, I thought
that's
that was
brilliant.
Fascinating, yeah.
And like, also, go on.
I was just going to say, look at us idiots, absolute hackers, you know, self-confessed hackers, mid-teens. How often are we in the driving range checking our positions in the mirror behind us?
Yeah, absolutely. Or videoing this well. I think it's interesting. It's like he kind of, there's a generalized theme that I noticed over the last week or so, which is both positive and highly annoying as well, and that it's kind of golf has moved on so much in the last couple of decades. It's where it is. It's, you know, it's powerful, it's incredibly technical, etc., etc. But like, Koepka strikes me as a throwback to an older way of thinking about golf. I was watching, Nicholas was on the Golf Channel, and he was talking about setting up he was talking about playing TPC. And even though he never actually played the course here, he played the one across the street, and then because he's won three of them, so he won in different places. So he wasn't speaking about this particular course, but he was talking about generally playing the players. And one of the things he said, which I thought was really interesting, and it's not certainly a surprise to Nicklaus fans or anyone who knows Nicklaus, is that his big challenge when preparing for the golf course was to marry the swing he knew he had with what he called the swing du jour. Like the one, so you know the old one, and we've talked about it before, that like, you know, if he feels like he's hitting more fades today, he'll stick to a fade, and if he feels he's hitting more draws, he'll stick to the draw. But it was interesting is that Nicklaus was renowned as being the first technical golfer. He was the first guy to really create the green book and, you know, to really study the courses and make notes, like way back in the early 60s. And so this is a guy who always applied like as much science as he felt was necessary to making sure that his golf game was the best it could possibly be. And the idea that he eschewed everything that Koepka has just said isn't for him, I think is really interesting. And so there's what I found kind of interesting was that there's been almost like an advertent or inadvertent reminder of like, look, lads, you know, they were playing golf for like hundreds of years before TrackMan came along.
Yeah.
And guys are shooting pretty low scores. Yeah. You know, you don't need TrackMan to be, if you're a good golfer, you're a good golfer.
Yeah. He was talking as well. One other point just jumped to mind now when you talk about majors. Obviously, he's won more majors than he has PGA Tour events, Koepka.
Yeah.
And he was saying, I wouldn't say it was arrogant. I thought he was matter of fact about it. It was like he was almost talking about himself in the third person. He said, look, I find this game pretty easy. And so that's just like I do. Sorry. At a PGA Tour event on the Friday, I'm pissed off because I'm not four shots clear and I get really angry. Whereas he said at a major, no matter what happens, I instantly accept it. And therefore, I play my best golf. I make a triple bogey. I'm like, that's okay. It's a major. Things are tougher here. Whereas the PGA Tour event, he feels like it should be easier to win. And so he has far less patience. And there's nothing more ineffective than a impatient golfer, is there?
That's very, very... Again, now I'm genuinely sorry that I switched off this conference.
Give Brooks a break, all right, buddy?
Well, you've just said three things that, like, you know, yeah, they're amazing. They're actually really, really interesting.
It's good.
The other thing that I noticed just from watching all of the precursors to the actual event is, and it happened last week, all of that Mr. Palmer stuff. It's just like, oh, for Christ's sakes.
What is this Mr. bullshit about?
It's absolute horseshit.
Alienating. And I wouldn't mind. I just watch it and I want to puke because Sky Sports had a show called A Tribute to Mr. Palmer. Just call it A Tribute to Arnold Palmer.
He's a man.
Is a golf's version of a knighthood. It's just ridiculous.
So and the Mr. Palmer crap has been around for a while, and so you're like, okay, that's just horseshit. And also, as well as, I mean, I wouldn't mind, but it's so corporate and fake.
Yeah.
Because Palmer was a lot of things. He was a brilliant people person. He was great. He also had an eye for the lady. You know, he was probably a normal dude. Yeah, like, he was a normal guy.
And who knows? The other thing is, who knows what any of these people get up to, especially there's no smartphones, there's no any of this.
Exactly.
Look, Arnold Palmer could be an absolute gent in every absolute way. I don't know. I didn't hang out with him. But like this complete whitewashing of anything bad and this.
Yeah. So it got me thinking because, you know, I mean, it's that thing. I'm sure. Now, maybe I've never met Arnold Palmer, but I would wager that if you met Arnie, if you were much younger, say like you were his grandkid's age and you saw Arnie at a tournament, you'd say, hey, Arnie, that he'd just like wave back, like, you know, call him Arnie. That's who he was. He was Arnie Palmer. But then I noticed it on the Golf Channel that they were addressing Nicklaus as Mr. Nicklaus. But like face to face, not Jack. I'm going to wager that that's not coming from Jack. That Jack's not going, oi, call me Mr. Nicklaus.
No.
But what it is to me is that for all of golf's efforts to be contemporary, to be very much rooted in the modern age, you know, it's slick and all its fancy YouTube videos and funny, and I'm using air quotes, all of it's funny. Oh my God, look at that. Look how quirky the players can be. That for all of this attempt to cater to a sports fan in 2019, that fundamentally golf's gaze is fixed permanently on the past.
Like, yeah, it's funny. And, I don't know. I look, there's definitely an element of that. I totally accept golf is really, really bad in this regard, but I just find it with all sport at the moment. I mean, if a sports person says something half intelligent, that like if your mate said it down the pub, you'd be like, meh, that's an average enough point. Whereas honestly, a sports person says anything now and it is dressed up into this guy or this gal is a modern day philosopher, is a genius.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like it's a follow. I think, you know, that whole, oh, eloquent for a footballer period.
Yeah.
We've gone absolutely ballistic. It's just like these very, very, very distinctly ordinary people who are very talented, obviously, at a certain thing, but are being, by the media, they are being exalted into something that they're just not.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. But I think, and that's certainly the case, but like, say, I don't know, like you obviously, let's say you're in studio and Willie John McBride shows up. You're not calling him Mr. McBride.
No.
Like, and I can't think of another sport that has this deference. Now, respect for people who've done great things in the game and who are the elder statesmen of the particular sport is absolutely, you know, good. It's fine. You know, respect the people that, that gave you the sport that you have. But this idea of like, it's like, as you said, I think you said it earlier, like, what is it? Are they the emperor of China? Like, you know, are we, do not look at the man in the face when you address him. Look down at the ground. It's just like, it's just, and it's part of this weird, I mean, maybe that's the golf is. Like, I'm just watching the golf here and I'm thinking, like, in every other sport where the sports stars tend to dress to reflect the audience they're catering to. So, you know, it's like they're all, whereas footballers all, well, most of them now all kind of have like, whatever, they dress like hip young hipsters or whatever. Like, golfers dress like old men. 22-year-old guys dress like old men.
Yeah.
Now, coincidentally, I'm 50 and I'm looking and I go, yeah, I really like that shirt. Ooh, those slacks look pretty good. So I'm not complaining about
it. Nice crease in those slacks. Very nice.
Yeah, look at that. But that's what I mean. It's like, I think this idea, the Mr. Nicholas, the Mr. Palmer, it's horseshit. And it's so fraudulent. I think that's the thing that I noticed.
It does just feel so cloying and fraudulent. Yeah, fraudulent
absolutely.
Is the word. It is fraudulent. And you kind of just, you're left a bit cold. You're like, this guy, you know, he's an amazing golfer and respect is absolutely something you would preach.
Sure.
But this is over the top. This guy is not a perfect human being, you know, he's just not. And you're treating him like he's almost Gandhi.
He's a god.
Like he's Gandhi.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, exactly. It's like, yeah, and I just think, but I'm thinking even in the American context, because these are guys are doing it on the Golf Channel. I wouldn't see it done so much on Sky or anything like that.
No, they do. Certainly, Mark Rowe was giving it the old Mr. Palmer a little bit.
Yeah, just like he, you know,
but it is absolutely more of an American-led thing.
But then I'm thinking, like, okay, so let's say, for instance,
maybe we're just cynical and European.
No. Let's say, for instance, maybe these are slightly younger guys, but I'm just thinking of the greats of basketball. If Wilt Chamberlain showed up, nobody's calling him, oh, Mr. Chamberlain. They're going, hey, Wilt, how you doing? Or I don't know, like, what's his name? Gordy, the hockey player from the 60s. Like, not go Mr. Gordy.
Yeah.
They're calling him by his first name. And it's like, and you show respect by saying you're one of the greats of this sport, you know? Anyway, it's, do you know what? It was a small observation, but it kind of stayed in my head and it kind of just,
You got angrier.
It just irritated me. Exactly.
If you're about 5 years off people calling you Mister.
I'm 5 years, like, at a push. Like, seriously, I'm probably a couple of months.
Hey, some sad news, by the way. Irish people will be interested. The old Players' Trophy, shining and golden. Waterford Crystal is no more. So an iconic Crystal trophy. And it was
What have they replaced it with?
It's like a 24-karat gold 3D technology. It's like a golfer's statue almost.
Ah, yes.
Kind of Paul Ferrer-esque, I would say.
I was going to say, yeah. By the way, as I'm watching, and I realize that live updates are useless given the way people listen to it, but Rory McIlroy on his front nine, he's 3 under.
Oh, good. No, let's throw that in.
Beautiful stuff. Really playing some really tight stuff.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I'm watching him here.
Look, this Sunday thing, I don't know. There was a time where he used to make a mess of every Friday. There was this whole season.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Like, it's just nothing. And I think he's going to win really soon. I'm very optimistic. I'm not buying into the whole Sunday thing. I think each day is different. There hasn't been a set trend as such. I am very, very confident Rory's going to win in a matter of weeks. I'm starting. I'm really starting to think Augusta's just going to be his year. I really am.
You think so?
Yeah.
Big moves, big moves. Yeah. Sunday fun day.
I'm really putting my neck out there. Rory McIlroy could win at Augusta, but no, I think I'm not worried at all by this situation, by the trend. I mean, it's good because he's been wildly inconsistent certain years, and you think
absolutely,
you know, there's nothing to go on. So I think we're pretty much done. Anything going on in the world beyond golf that's grabbing you?
No, not at all.
Who's
no,
this new Democrat candidate?
Beto O'Rourke.
Yeah.
Hipster boy.
Do we like Beto? He looks a little bit too cool for school for me.
Well, this is it. I would like to hope that, well, do you remember 3 years ago when the entire, well, the liberal world, shall we say, fell in love with Justin Trudeau?
Yeah.
And he came to Ireland. Like, as they say, as my granny used to say, that fella, he's too sweet to be wholesome. And you know, Justin Trudeau is having his problems now, and you know, he's been shown to have like feet of clay, and you know, he ain't all that, as they say. So Beto O'Rourke is this guy who's just emerged out of nowhere. He speaks well. He's clearly kind of a liberal lion, and certainly because he's Texan, I think there's a sense that like, wow, you know, he can speak to people in the South and you know, the generally conservative voter and appeal to them, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know. It's early doors. I think the Democratic field, says he, not really knowing politics that well, but it's so thick at the moment. I'll tell you one thing. I don't know, but I'm not an American citizen, so I'm not going to vote in American elections. But whoever wins an American election impacts on the rest of the world. So I'd like to see someone younger rather than one of those old, you know, old people that are.
What about
Bernie Sanders?
How do we feel about Bernie?
No. I've got the Bernie burn big time. Yeah, I'm a big Bernie fan, except for him, because he's got a young heart, Joe,
and a young supporter base,
and a hugely young supporter base. Quite
interesting, Rourke, isn't it? The way young people have really latched on to the old dude. You wouldn't have suspected that on paper.
That's socialism, Joe. That's socialism.
Mm-hmm.
But Beto O'Rourke, I presume you saw the front cover of Vanity Fair.
Well, that's what made me sit up and go, interesting. This guy looks like he's wearing Ralph Lauren or something.
Yeah, he's a cool looking dude. I mean, in the end, this is a general observation, and that's just about US politics, but just politics in general, is spare me the guy or woman who just looks good or you get, you know. I want someone who's actually going to do something, you know, and
hence Bernie. There's a certain charm to Bernie's scruffled appearance.
Well, he's been around for a long, long time, you know. So anyway, there you go. There's my tuppence.
No, it's interesting. I knew you'd be on top of that, and I just saw him, and I thought I must read a piece about this guy, because I did see him speaking a couple of months ago, and he does speak well.
He's an impressive guy, no question. Yeah. He is an impressive speaker.
Yeah. Is Trump going to win again?
Hard to say, like his negatives, like obviously he's solid in his base, they like him, but his negatives are so high. It'd be hard. I mean, as a friend of mine who is the political editor of Vox.com, a guy called Ben Pauker, really smart guy, and the quote, and I spoke to him about 3 weeks ago, and he said to me, he goes, never underestimate the Democrats' ability to fuck things up for themselves.
Yeah, they really are losers, aren't they? they're just so naive and nice.
Well,
and
absolutely.
Politics. Alrighty. So the players this week, and then I mean we're on now. We're a month out from Augusta. This is it, Fionn. This is it.
The redesign of the golfing calendar was designed so that we would have week bang bish bosh Super Sunday every week.
Well, it's good. I mean, we'll have. I don't know what we're going to do from October on this year. But this is good now. We're in it. So we'll see how
we'll
the players goes.
Fend off listener complaints about why we haven't recorded a pod.
We might actually have to get guests on then, I think. It'd be the,
the exactly.
Righty. Okay.
Talk to you soon.
See ya.
Starter kit right here.